If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTradio.live. Patrick Henningsen and TNT.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Look, we're back. It's a crazy world out there, isn't it? It is absolutely mental. We're going to try to, reel in some of these stories. There's one in particular that is making a lot of headway. And, this depleted uranium story. And I thought we'd get into it just to clarify some things for our listenership. You're probably wondering, what's this doing in the headlines? Well, the Russian minister made a big announcement about Britain's delivery of DU weapons to the war zone in Ukraine, and basically said this is they're going to treat this as a kind of provocation, as it were. And so this, it's made the headlines, and rightfully so. It's triggered the activists on this issue. And any war activists have a lot to be up in arms with, of course, because when you're talking about DU, depleted uranium, and I know a little bit about it, and also probably Freddie Ponton, we covered this story. So this is all the big story now, but if you remember back in May of 2022, Freddie Ponton, he's a journalist and writes as well for 21st Century Wire, he penned an article called "Are France and NATO Shipping Depleted Uranium Weaponry into Ukraine? Shocking development, which contravenes European and international commitments to clean environment and protecting the health and well-being of their populations." Yeah, back in May. And this article actually made quite a few waves. It was very widely read. The mainstream media didn't want to touch it because obviously this is politically explosive. And certainly this would upset a lot of people in powerful positions, especially those people who like trafficking weapons and our politicians who facilitate the trafficking of weapons. So what's the story here? So Britain is preparing to send some arms there, some weaponry. But the reality is they already have. You're probably saying, "Oh, do you have any receipts for that? You got any evidence for that?" Well, actually, we do. And so when you're talking about anti-tank missiles, there's a whole array of anti-tank options there. You've got the Mistral systems from France. You've got the Javelin systems from the United States. And you have the NLAW systems. These are made... The major manufacturer is Saab. You remember the motor vehicles, Saab, Swedish, Saab. Saab also is into weapons, and they're into anti-tank, similar to the Javelin, very portable, lightweight. This was supposed to be the big game changer for Ukraine. And you have the Milan systems, anti-tank systems. So those are French. And here's how the DU makes it into Ukraine. See, France bought a whole load of Javelins from the United States years ago. And what they've done is basically, and they have suspected is pretty close, I would say, to certainty that the Javelins from the U.S. use depleted uranium as armor-piercing anti-tank munitions, okay? So that's in those Javelins. So France was shipping those to Ukraine. That's DU. And probably, maybe, you have in the other systems, the Milan anti-tank systems. And also there's a portable anti-aircraft. The Mistral systems can be used for that as well. And the Milan 2, which is similar to it's a sort of shoulder-mounted, like a bazooka, similar to the Javelin system. So they're all, it's the same family of weapons. And it's very likely that some or all of these use depleted uranium. And so, we have just so much evidence in this, basically. And if you look at this article at 21stCenturyWire.com, you just put it into the search bar at the top of 21 Wire, and you put in France depleted uranium. That's it. France depleted uranium in Ukraine. So those three terms, put them in the search bar, and this report comes up. And no stone left unturned, as usual with Freddie Ponton. No stone left unturned. Full analysis, all the documents, all the evidence. The case is pretty clear. Next generation N laws. Yeah, and this is the ones that the UK have been sending. This made in Sweden, made by Saab. And the UK have been sending them. So according to Freddie, we now know that there have likely been at least 8 shipments of these missiles sent via the UK and Sweden too. Thousands of NLAWs have been promised, meaning that thousands of kilograms of depleted uranium have already entered Ukraine. Goodness gracious. Goodness gracious. So the potential legal conundrum here is pretty obvious. We're talking about trafficking of weapons, not just deadly weapons, but the half-life of DU is a 500 million years. 500 million years. Introduced on a wide scale during the first Gulf War in 1991 by the United States. Massive birth defects, reported. Toxic poisoning, radiological poisoning as well, respiratory illnesses, death. Really, it sort of conquers your, you've got your respiratory system and then the lymphatic system, because all of these, you know, charged ionized particles have to go somewhere, these free radicals. And they end up in your lymphatic systems and your endocrine systems, as kidney, liver, cancer, birth defects, potential DNA damage done by these. And they went big on these. NATO went big in Yugoslavia. So all the shock horror, oh, Ukraine so close to Europe. Americans say that Ukraine's the heart of Europe, because they exaggerate like that because they want to make you think that Russia's about to invade Europe. But actually during the Yugoslavian war, where NATO broke up Yugoslavia by force and then created their own, invented a country out of it called Kosovo. There's a lot of DU in Yugoslavia. They went pretty much all wild there as well. So yeah, this is the problem here. Radioactive doesn't go away. Needs to be basically identified, either cordoned off, and then a very expensive and time-consuming cleanup process needs to happen in the areas. So right now, just think about it. You've got all the grain farming and agricultural lands in Ukraine potentially contaminated, large sections contaminated with depleted uranium. And that's getting into the food supply of the Europeans, of your bread. Do I need to spell this out anymore? Do we need to go into more detail of the problem? Why do they use these munitions? Well, it's good business. It's good business. It's part of the recycling process after the uranium enrichment process. And you have this, what would normally be radioactive waste. They found a way to repurpose the radioactive waste into useful purposes, like killing people and contaminating, polluting landscapes. As they're very creative like that. They're very solutions oriented, the military industrial complex. They don't waste anything. And certainly this is what it is. So why it's 2 times denser and heavier than lead. And so it's all, that means that you can use less material in the munitions than you would, let's say, for lead. Means you can have a more powerful penetrating munitions, be it bullet or artillery or anti-tank. You can have more powerful pound per square centimeter or millimeter. So it's more compact. And this is the DU is, it's also more deadly when it hits. It can cut through metal like a hot knife through butter. It's basically a dart. It sits in the back of the bullet or the munition. And on, upon impact, the dart, which is very heavy on impact, will move to the front through the explosion, and that will very easily penetrate and then disperse through whatever. And we're talking through thick steel very easily. So for anti-tank warfare, this is the weapon of choice. The problem is the dust then is dispersed upon impact and goes everywhere. And a lot of problems with this, certainly with, not just with soldiers, people who handle this stuff and who manufacture it on a daily basis, I'm sure it can't be healthy. So anyway, what we're saying to you, ladies and gentlemen, is we've looked into this already this year. We've 21 Wire, Freddie Pontone have released a scathing, detailed report, probably to date the best report on this subject that you will find on the entire internet, you see. So that's what we aim for when we do our reporting. We try to have the best there. And certainly Freddie's done a tremendous job here. You've got the stingers. You've got the man pads. There's so many different variations of this. And the health effects are well documented. And this stuff's everywhere. So when is it going to end? When is it going to be an international treaty to put this one to bed? Seriously, this is just outrageous. So I can't believe we're even having this debate, honestly. Why are we even having this debate? These things should be banned. To be honest, they are in contravention of the Geneva Conventions. It can be interpreted as such. But is the political will there? Are the main powers going to come to the table and say, no, no more of these? The U.S., Britain, United States, France. Well, it seems everyone who's dealing DU in Ukraine doesn't want to come to the table. That's the problem. So there's plenty of evidence here, folks. This is not good. It's been going on. Just the fact this latest chapter has made the news, I think, is good. That's a positive thing. And Britain's in the dock on this, and they should be. They've got a lot to answer for on this, but it's not a new issue. It's not a new issue. And just ask the people of Yugoslavia. And when I was reporting on the ground in Syria in 2017, I was told that DU munitions were being used by Al-Qaeda and ISIS, and there's plenty of that poison blowing around in Syria, well, across the whole Middle East. Really. I'm sure Israel uses them as well. Nobody seems to care. A lot of talk about the environment, a lot of virtue signaling, but you have really deadly compounds like this. They don't really care. Nobody seems to care. I don't see Greta Thunberg protesting outside the Saab manufacturing facility in Sweden about the production of this environmentally deadly compound, not just deadly in terms of its military applications, but deadly to the environment, to the water supply, to the food supply, to animals, to humans. The list goes on and on. Where are you, Greta? Wherefore art thou, Greta? Saint Greta of the rising seas, where are you on this issue? Where are your acolytes? Where is your congregation on this issue? Where are you guys? Nowhere. Nowhere, because you didn't get orders from head office to protest this one, because this is a real environmental issue. You only protest fake environmental issues. Let's take a break here with TNT. We'll come back on the other side, try to catch up with our research assistant, Christian, see what he's got to offer on the news slate today. I'm sure it's going to be interesting. Looking forward to it. I'm Patrick Kingston, your host. We'll be right back.
Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Joe Biden has jumped into the fray of climate once again and saying all sorts of silly, nonsensical things, as only U.S. President Joe Biden can do. That his green policies, if they are not put forward, that young people, their generation, the young generation, will be damned. He condemned kind of like children of the corn or something, you know, kids today. Unless we can go full Marxist, unless we can shut down our economy and take away free choice and do planned recessions and regulate every aspect of our lives and ban gas stoves and ban gas-powered cars and have thermostat controls in your house and destroy your dishwashers and your washing machines and stop you from eating meat and get rid of your single-family homes and racist roads and make flying a rare treat that you can only afford and only, basically a playground for the rich again. Unless we do all of that and completely restructure our economy and go along, with WHO pandemics and merge COVID and then they're all going to be damned.
The Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Affordable housing. We can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
This is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Look, there's a lot going on in the world. Certainly, we touched on some of the big stories already today. Let's move over, however. Let's move over and check out what's going on. Well, we'll go to the UK right now, and let's just try to check up with our research assistant for the show, Christian. I think we've got him on the line right now. Hello, Christian. How are you doing?
I'm really good, Patrick. Yourself, buddy?
I'm all right. You know how it goes. You know how it goes, the rough and tumble, trying to put the world to rights as we do every day. So, I was going to catch up to you, see what you've got to offer on the news slate today, Christian.
Okay, so the UK is certainly in my focus of topics of conversation today. And like you said there, I know you've covered a lot of the news, what's been floating around at the moment with Boris to our in geopolitics and the fun that we're having around the world. But I'd like to draw your attention to a couple of things, actually. One being, are you aware of a company called Civicus? They are the global monitoring for press freedom, for the freedoms in different countries. They obviously produce a chart that's published every 3 months based on where they believe the press freedom, the ability to have freedoms in each country, is currently scaled at. And they published a report that came out this past week. And the UK has slipped down, graded from a high former freedom-loving country, and has slipped down 18 points along that scale to a rather terrible status worldwide due to our laws that have been passed, the way that we are invoking it on freedom of speech, freedom of protest, our inability to cope with our environmental people who are going out there and painting on walls and so on, the way that protesters are dealing with activists and journalists, civic society organizations, harassment and so on. So the UK has dropped a considerable amount of points in the Civicus monitor, and they obviously monitor 197 countries and their territories, and we have dropped down a considerable number. In fact, Russia sits higher than us.
Well, that's interesting. So what's the significance of that? Do you think that, what are they trying to communicate there? What idea are they trying to promote there?
Well, I believe that the message they're trying to put across here is they're talking about the violations that have happened, particularly in the UK. A number of downgraded countries included Russia, Myanmar, Guatemala, Tunisia, and the UK. Many things about attack on the free press, the ability to express yourself, the range of harassment tactics that are being used against journalists and activists, the people talking out against the oppression that their city and their countries are facing. And because of this, the points rating system has brought us down considerably. And also that coincides with the Human Rights Watch. Their report also came out this past week that talking about the human rights protections in the UK have now faced a significant assault. And they're now talking about it's now human rights concerns for the UK standard on press freedom and the way it's controlled and the way that they're the way that basically we interact with society. And certainly the things that have come through, such as the police bill, the online harms bill, and the ability now that they want to obviously get into the back end of things like WhatsApp. They want to make sure no one's messaging each other. They want to make sure that we don't have any ability to communicate with each other, not unless they have got a backdoor access to that. So it also comes down to Britain's corruption has also dropped in terms of their measurement, in terms of the tracking civic space, as they call it. It's now the UK's worst performance on the global corruption index, and we've now dropped 9 paces on that. So the way the UK is seen in the world kind of space, the UK is dropping further and further and further back in terms of our what we want to put out there and project to the world, that we are a fun-loving, free place where you can come and you have a freedom of expression. The truth is, you don't.
Well, that's true. That's true. That's an important index. That's an important index. So we have this, what do we call these? Our values. You hear this a lot, don't you? Our values.
Yes.
Democratic values, Western values, rules-based international order values. It's not at home, but we want to enforce or pretend to want to enforce it or promote it overseas. But it's, so you're saying those rights are being clawed back by the state.
Indeed so. Yeah. So their report, they've called it the, People Power Under Attack, 2022. But it's only published now. It obviously tracking, other countries, it says here, as part of their report, I got to read it the last couple of hours or so, it says there's 28% of the world's population now living in countries that are considered to be closed, as in those countries that have no ability to protest, no ability to speak out against their situations. And obviously, the worst a country's rating is by their monitoring standards. Countries like Myanmar, Hong Kong, Tajikistan, Afghanistan are countries that sit in that closed bracket. And obviously, the UK has now come down to obstructed, as the phrase that's been placed upon our country. But also, Greece also comes under that as well. So more established democracies are finding themselves getting knocked down because the way they want to control the ability to have free speech and the work of journalists, such as yourself and many other people out there.
All we're trying to do is try to, you know, present what we think is the true depiction of reality. Try where we can to give, you know, a truthful analysis, more accurate analysis, maybe present facts and figures that are being, you know, covered up or ignored or, you know, sidelined by the mainstream media. And, you know, it's hard to say what's true. You know, there is no truth. I think the truth is constantly being refined because of new information, understanding, and insights. And of course, it's going to be interpreted differently, isn't it, by people at different points in time and history, depending on the political environment, of course, right?
So, absolutely.
So, I mean, we have to deal with that dynamic aspect of this. But so it is interesting how the state constructs various agencies and apparatuses to control information or to, you know, what they call fight disinformation. This is a very trendy term the last couple of years, or Russian disinformation or whatever, election interference information, anything that in America, the U.S. government deems anything that criticizes the result of an election after it's been declared by somebody who knows who declares elections. I don't know. That's somehow election interference. It's a threat to the what they call, and this is in the DHS documents. Get this, Christian. They call Twitter and social media election infrastructure, essential election infrastructure, and therefore anything that they deem to be disinformation is a threat to national security and the essential election infrastructure. And that justifies all the censorship, all the deplatforming, all of that. So that's where the state's going with all this. Everything's militarized. Like this is a battlefield. There's a battlefield. That's how the government's looking at it. So that's interesting, you know, if taken into account what you're just sharing with us here. These two things are a little bit at odds, aren't they?
It certainly is. I mean, there is certainly a perception that we want to project onto the world, but there's also what comes with that. They are clearly deploying a range of tactics to like stifle like civil society, science and critics and so on. I mean, without the freedom of speech to the right to peacefully protest, democracy just doesn't work. And I think people are losing their tools and their ability to communicate effectively. I mean, right now, we are not seeing a strict lockdown on those, but we are seeing it on our journalists. We are seeing it on activists. We are seeing those who speak truth, those who speak opposite to power or any kind of opposing view. They are the ones getting shut down. So people could not have a... they're not informed because they're not aware of any other perspective. It is our way or no way. And that really is kind of where, shall we say, there's a certain lead, there's a certain leaning towards that there is a projection. They want only a certain narrative. They only want one view going out there. And it is their view. And there is no opposing view because there just can't be one. And anything that is that is, of course, deemed as misinformation, disinformation, and so on.
That's amazing, isn't it? It is absolutely amazing watching this kind of unfold. I mean, most people are going to look at this, Christian. They're going to say, well, this is obvious that, you know, this some of these sort of initiatives have, you know, they've gone way too far. They've overstepped the mark and all this stuff. You know, at that point, you know, is there some politicians that what do they normally do? Step up? You know, the Tony Benns of the world, they step up and they make the speech and then the press quotes them, and then the pressure comes, and then there's some kind of a realization and government that this is actually a bad idea. Let's just shelve that. It's embarrassing. They're not embarrassed anymore about it, though. I don't know if there's any shame left in politics. This is actually the crisis, isn't it? It's a crisis of character, I think, Christian. It's a crisis of character. We seem to have these politicians in the past that had that they were brimming with character, brimming with principle, and they're willing to stake their reputations on some of these issues. It's hard to find that now. It's hard to pin them down on anything to find out what their actual. Have you seen them try to pin Boris down on any position on anything? He tries to stay as vague as possible.
I think that goes the case for most politicians or even businesses or anyone who's in a position of power, because you have so many different dynamics within that business or within that power structure that they have to project they're pleasing everybody when in fact they're potentially not doing anything because they don't want to offend a certain group of that. You know, you have to be ticking all the boxes at all times, and how dare you be principled in one matter? You're not allowed to be, because you effectively are marginalizing a sector that potentially are your voters or your constituents and so on. So I guess you have to be vague, but in doing so, it means you don't stand for nothing.
Yeah, true. Well, do they stand for anything? I mean, you know, do politicians feel like they have to stand for anything these days?
No, not at all. And I think there's certainly, I'm thinking about workers' rights right now. I mean, we're seeing all these multiple protests, works and strikes, whether it be from the NHS to the rail systems. And I've seen bin men going on strike, local councils going on strike. I mean, the politicians are never for them, which is really odd, because particularly say that the Labour movement in the UK, they are almost like, we don't want them to strike. We need them to stay where they are. We need not give them money. We need to keep down their rights. We don't want them to have working contracts and good pensions and so on. We need them to be as minimally happy as possible and just held down. I mean, it's odd. We're now seeing across all of our political sectors, from the Liberal Democrats to the Labour Party to all the different minority groups and the Tories, they don't want to see workers having any more money. It's odd. Any rights anymore. It's just we're losing that grip entirely, and the organizations that are meant to be there to support us aren't. So the people are finally stamping with their feet and going, this is not fair, and they're going out there on strike.
And so do you think, and here's the big worry that people have. Okay, in France right now, you've seen the protests there, Christian.
Certainly have, yeah.
They're massive, you know, so the barricades are up and all this stuff. So the unions in France, and let's we don't need to, they need no introduction. The French know how to mobilize on the labor front. So the ports, the refineries, all these sort of major infrastructural unions and stuff like that, those who are on board with this are striking now. So it's going to bring things to a halt in the country. The irony is, of course, that protesters can't get fuel to get to the cities to protest. So that's one of the, it's difficult, that one. So what about the food supply? We've already got, you know, supply chain interruptions. There's food not making it to the shelves. You reported on this in Britain as well.
Certainly have, yeah.
So what about the strategy of industrial action? Because I'm looking at the rail strikes in Britain, and I've got a problem with this, and also the nurses, the nurse strikes, all the wage strikes. I've got a problem with this because none of them stood up for the employees that were fired for not getting vaccinated, for taking the mandatory jab. And the unions weren't interested in that issue. And I got a problem with that. So, you know, I support their right to do, you know, union things and workers' rights and, you know, fair wages and all that. But, you know, when it really counted, they weren't there. And so there are a lot of people that are questioning that side of things, you know. So there's a little bit of a, let's say, a fracture in some of the support base that would have normally been backing them. And so this just, to me, Christian, this is just typical of the chaos, you know, across so many of these different spectrums of society. But what are your thoughts on that whole striking program?
Yeah, it's really interesting. If I could just interject with something, but it's highly related, actually. So I'm a GMB steward for my store where I represent 400 colleagues. I went to the GMB union and I says, hey, my position is no vaccination. And my colleagues, some of them, what's our representation with this? And they actually said it's down to the individual whether they're going to take it or not. And we agree with the government's decision. But I'm like, yeah, but you technically are funding labor and labor should be in position of opposition. Why are we doing this? And then we're just like, no, we want people to be safe, thus go and have a vaccine. And I'm like, but I don't want to. And then they said, well, you're putting your colleagues at risk. And I'm like, you are just completely contradicting yourself. It was a terrible point, even for me, as representing colleagues and also myself in that situation. I want to see workers' rights protected. And I want to see them take responsibility for that. And I didn't see that at all. And with the situation where we got like the TUC, there's the Equity Trust where we're out protesting, there's the rail strike and so on. I think a lot of people are also now using having a strike also as a kind of way to vent some frustration, I think, at the government. The other issue, of course, is a lot of those industries, the government aren't in control of them. They're owned by private companies now. And the private companies aren't willing to give them any cash.
So that's like, yeah, so there's government jobs. Okay, the NHS, if there's a vaccine mandate, and by the way, they threatened to do that to the NHS, and then they pulled back at the last minute. And it's funny because I was talking to some nurses that I had met during that interim period, you know, like say December of 2021, and they were preparing to basically look for a new job. They were getting ready to resign. And I said to them, I said, don't resign just yet. I said, they've delayed it. They've kicked it down the road to the winter. And of course, and they relented, the government gave up, and then they lifted COVID restrictions, remember, in the beginning of 2022. And yeah. And then all of a sudden but before that, a lot of people in the NHS left because they just resigned because they didn't want to have to go through that final phase of being sacked, or, you know, they just, because some people got to make plans. They're like, well, I might as well resign now and then try to get organized some other work. And so that was interesting. But a private company, that's a policy issue, isn't it? Because there wasn't really a mandate, was there? It wasn't a national mandate for employees. It really comes down to corporate policy, doesn't it?
It was, yeah. There were certainly companies that required it. Certainly some people I know who run care homes, they were mandated to do that as a health directive. But even though there were private care homes, they were still given that directive. But I guess in terms of private businesses, generally speaking, no, they were not.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a little bit of a gray area. That's what's being exploited in America by the Biden administration. And he did a head fake as well. Well, they call it a head fake in basketball when you give them a head fake and they jump and then you go by them. To throw the defense off, you give them a head fake. Yeah, they did that. Biden gave a massive head fake. He said, I'm passing an executive order for vaccine mandates for any company above 100 employees and all federal workers. But he never did the executive order. He just basically said he was going to do it. I think it was September of 2021. And then it didn't actually draft the executive order. I think something eventually dribbled in like way months after, and it was like not even binding. So that was a really interesting trick by the White House, as they basically faked out everybody to go. And then people were just like going and everyone's corporations were implementing it. And they thought they had the you know, they were forced to. I spoke to business owners that said, well, this is a government policy now, we have to do it. And there was no executive order at the time. So it's interesting that these are kind of inconvenient truths that some people are having trouble looking at. But look, I'm with Christian here, our research assistant for the show. Let's take a break here with the network. I'm Patrick Kenningson, your host. You're listening to TNT, Today's News Talk. We'll be right back.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Oh, how sweet it is. The great one Jackie Gleason's favorite tagline is ever so appropriate to describe Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's plight after it came to light that he withheld over 600 pages of exculpatory evidence from the Manhattan grand jury impaneled to indict President Donald Trump. Withholding exculpatory evidence is a serious breach of legal ethics. I predicted that this political persecution, which was declined by the Federal Election Commission, by the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, by the New York State Attorney General, would come back to bite Alvin in the arse. And sure enough, it looks like it might lead to his disbarment. And away we go. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
I've been driving for most of my life, and I've always been a safe driver. But as I've grown older, driving has become more challenging. Intersections feel busier. Driving in peak hour traffic and travelling longer distances is stressful. And driving at night or in bad weather is risky. Even small mistakes can be costly. Look for the signs. If driving is getting harder, there are alternatives. Make a plan to stop driving on your terms. Don't stop driving by accident. Think Road Safety, a message from the Government of South Australia.
Patrick Henningsen talks on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to TNT, Today's News Talk. We're here with Christian, our research assistant for the show. And that's an interesting issue. You know, industrial action, labor unions, and, you know, it's especially in a country like France, it's a little bit more of a muted issue in other countries. You know, in Britain, Margaret Thatcher sorted out the unions, and it's been a downhill slide ever since the Thatcher government. So totally different atmosphere in terms of organized labor in a country like the UK, and definitely in the United States. There's a lot less in terms of that sort of membership, and the leverage isn't quite there like it used to be. And of course, it was very much attached to political power and political platforms and campaigns. So there's been a separation along those fronts. So that's an interesting issue, and we'll maybe revisit that in the future. What else are you looking at right now, Christian?
So one thing that does tickle me, and the very first time we had a conversation on TNT Radio, actually we were talking about food banks, and obviously I organize, and obviously the stock for a food bank that comes to our store, and Right now, so this past week, there's been details that have come out from the Department of Work and Pensions that demonstrates that currently 3% of the UK families, which on the whole of it, that's 2.1 million people, and they're dependent on food banks, which is an absolutely astonishing number. If you were to head over to Twitter right now, you'll see actually it's the number one trending topic for the UK right now. It's 3% of the UK dependent basically on food, obviously given to donation centres and then obviously then handed out to people who are unable to afford food, people who are going without food on a daily basis, they're skipping meals because they can't afford it. The cost of living is biting really hard. And certainly people who don't have an income, or we've seen right now there's so many jobs and companies that are closing up shop and people don't really know where to turn, and food banks, unfortunately, are having to pick up the slack. It says here that and there was a Sistema report that came out last March, and it said that 2.5 million people were having to use food banks then. So potentially that number has actually it's shrunk a little, but clearly 2 million people is absolutely extraordinary. People who are having to depend on food being handed to them because they can't afford it is crazy, considering how much food we throw away. It's incredible, some incredible numbers.
It is. So, like, you've been covering this, you've been keeping an eye on this issue for a while, and I've noticed this as well in the big chains, like Sainsbury's, for instance, and the sort of the bins, the baskets, where there's more people kind of using them, I've noticed in recent years, whereas before, not so much. But there is not just discount free food available near the entrances of a lot of chains and things like that. Then the food bank thing, as you said, Christian, it's really expanded. And there's a lot of people I know that work and volunteer, and they're helping with that. And I think that's a great thing. But at the same time, it's disturbing how much it's expanding, because then that's a bad indicator of the state of the economy, of society. Certainly, I think they're underestimating the employment levels that the government keeps boasting. I think it's much higher. And it doesn't look like it's improving massively. I don't see areas of growth in the economy. I just see contractions happening.
Yeah, likewise, contractions across all sectors pretty much. What is really interesting, I saw Richie Allen comment on, basically he reshared this particular story, and he put up an interesting comment that says that the Refugee Council in the next 3 years, the UK government has to spend $9 billion feeding and housing migrants whose asylum claims have been denied while they're being waited to be deported. Meanwhile, British families are starving, and he says the Hunger Games society is almost upon us. And it is a really interesting dichotomy. I know for full hotels that are not far from my workplace that are ran by private companies, 100 plus rooms are being rented out to migrants who are given three meals a day. They've got a nice posh hotel room, and that is creating a lot of friction between those individuals who have nothing to do day-to-day basis. They hang outside, they urinate, they defecate, or they're just trying to keep themselves busy doing stuff. And there's people in the same like location who can't afford to buy anything. And the government is kind of like overseeing both. And it's a weird dichotomy to see.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, let's be honest, it's not expensive. It's not going to be expensive. And look how much they dumped on COVID, you know, and that was for nothing. And I'm going to make a controversial statement here. And by the way, I made this statement at the beginning of the pandemic, and I repeated it many times after that on the various other programs, that if you count all the tens or hundreds of billions that the government in this country, in America, it's worse. It's like $8 trillion. If you count all that money on COVID, all the measures, all of the funding, paying the businesses, eat out the help out, da-da-da-da-da, track and trace app, da-da-da-da-da, tests, vaccines, all that, all that money did not save one life. It did not prevent any, quote, COVID from, you know, whatever. It didn't stop any virus. My opinion is there wasn't a virus anyway, but it was a waste of money. So they're willing to throw everything in the kitchen sink at a bit of a phantom menace in the name of science fiction, and what it would cost to provide basic food vouchers for people in need. This is aside from anything else, income support, housing benefit. This is aside from that, what the government could do in terms of food stamps or vouchers is a drop in the bucket financially. But this is a sadistic kind of austerity obsessed, especially Tory government, are particularly bad because they seem like their mission is to basically take it to the working class, and they're also squeezing the middle class as well. It's like, you know, they don't want anything. They just want an underclass and then an upper class and nothing in between. So, I mean, I don't think it's that expensive and difficult to do, Christian, but, you know, considering, like I said, they blew money. They literally, and they lost the value, created inflation, devalued the currency, created inflation for nothing, for nothing. There's no,
yeah.
Only the people that cashed in on the PPE and, you know, if you're lucky enough to be in the business of taking advantage of the pandemic in some way, shape, or form, they benefited. But like the vast majority of it is just a waste.
Yeah, if you remember when Rishi Sunak was like, okay, we're going to spend $330 billion on people to stay at home. And that's what they did. And that was something like 20% of their GDP.
And yeah, exactly. You think about what else, exactly. Yeah, 20% of the GDP.
But I can remember like a couple of years before when Jeremy Corbyn's like, okay, can we spend $20 billion on solving the homelessness problem?
No.
And I'm like, no, it's too much. Magic money tree. Where's that money going to come from?
Yeah.
And you think but you just spent that much here. So that money was available. It's just sitting in the coffers and obviously in the treasury going, perhaps we should do something with this and perhaps fix a problem, fix this generation now. They weren't willing to do that. And that speaks still volumes to many people even today.
So food vouchers, food stamps, or some sort of we have the EBT system in America. I know it's not ideal. And some people are going to say that's not a solution to the problem. But look, you know, this, you're talking about a couple of billion. I mean, that's like lunch money for Zelensky, right?
Yeah.
So, do you know what I mean? It's milk money.
I do.
It's milk.
Yeah, we're willing to give so many billions away to a war that's not on our doorstep for a purpose that clearly is political, to poke the bear in the north, when we're not willing to spend money on our own population is just insane.
Yeah, so, you know, for a food voucher, say, you know, if somebody's really in need, 50 quid a week, or, you know, 50 quid a week, 40 quid a week for means tested. I mean, you're talking about is hundreds of millions of pounds maximum for whatever that bracket in need is in the country, especially people with dependents, right? Especially people on dependent disabilities, this, you know, single moms, all that stuff. It's chump change. It's chump change. And it would make a huge difference, but the cost of the rising cost of food is just unacceptable, because the reason there's inflation in the food is because of government policy. So if they're not going to change the policy that caused the inflation, then at least, you know, provide a little relief on the food side with the people in need. I mean, is that too much to ask the glorious government? I mean, come on, guys.
So I communicate with the Trussell Trust. I know a couple of people who work there, and they basically are a network of food banks across the country, mainly centralized around the East Midlands. So they've got like 1,300 food banks. And they gave a statement to The Observer a couple of weeks ago where they're saying, you know, if there is an increase now, there will be a breaking point. It's the point where they're going to have to turn people away because they don't have enough food to give them. And that was from like January. That was their report on that. And we're now seeing that actually might well happen because people can't afford the food. So they're now looking, you know, to alternative ways of how to get some calories.
3% of the population using food banks. Ridiculous. Yeah. So the fake meat investors, they're lining up to cash in on some, changes in dietary habits and supply chain disruptions and the banning of meat because of the climate and all this stuff. So the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation are heavily invested in that sort of stuff, GMO foods and crops and fake meat, fake fish, fake chicken, fake beef. So what else are these guys up to, honestly?
Well, they're up to a number of other things. So one big thing that came out of the news a couple of weeks ago, actually, Bill and Melinda Gates, the foundation, they have funded to the tune of $4.7 million, or $1 million, I do apologize, but it's going to a company in London for the agricultural development, and that company is called Zelp. And Zelp produce a rather interesting piece of technology, and their technology is a climate change device.
Oh, God.
That is a catalytic converter for cows.
Oh, my God. No. No.
Yeah, so it's a facial mask that a cow would have to wear, and it would convert their belches, their burps, from being methane-based and changing it to CO2.
You know, at this point, you know, it's got to be pitchforks. You know, it's got to be pitchforks. You know, these people need to be run out of town. They literally need to be physically run out of town. This is ridiculous. These people got too much money, and I don't know where. This is the same Gates that is paying right now to develop a hot air balloon that goes into the stratosphere and sprays medical particulate to block out sunlight to fight climate change. This is the same Bill Gates, and he wants to put masks on cows. So what's he going to do about their, you know, their flatulence? He's got a plug he's working on, or what?
I've no idea about the other end. I can only tell you about the front end.
The back end of the business. Yeah, the back end profits. They haven't announced that one yet, have they?
But now here's the thing. There's a link I just posted in the group chat there. So it's a link of to the Gates Foundation grants that they've given away in the last 2 or 3 months or so. Well, now what? In going to this website where you can see that their donation to Zelp, there's a list of other things on this list that should certainly pique a lot of people's attention, one of which is the One Health campaign.
The One Health.
That's right. So there's a grant they've given away here for $800,000 to the District of Columbia, Washington, for global health and public awareness and analysis on that list there that I'm sure people are going to be poking their eyes at. Also, there's they've given money to trans organizations here and
for transporting things, right?
Oh, well, this is the trans of their gender.
The transgender. I see. And what's that have to do with the cost of cow methane offsets? are they just funding the social justice agenda, or?
I think it comes into the fact that if you're doing these things, you get a green credit system. So you basically get a pass on your tax if you're in that country. Two other organizations that have taken a nice amount of sponsorship money is Frontier Nutrition and Collective Minds Radiology. Both have taken the tune of $300,000 here for gender equality of babies and children of MNCH, which is Nutrition of Children and Health. So they're getting gender equality training and education and so on from birth. And they've been tuned to the value of like $300,000 from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. You can see them from that committed grants database I just dropped in the group chat.
Oh, interesting. What do babies need gender reaffirming counseling? Or they can't even talk the first 24 months. What they need to, I don't, what, it's weird.
So here is the United Nations Population Fund, $2.4 million for gender equality and family planning.
Right. Gender equality and family planning. So for what that sounds like, gender equality, that means for trans and abortion, basically.
That's pretty much it.
Because that's what family planning is, a euphemism for abortion. How charming. But, you know, that's all good. That's a day in the life. That's a day's work for the WHO. And who funds the WHO? Wait, hold on. Let me look. Number one funder is the United States of America. And number two is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Number three is China. So Bill and Melinda Gates give more money to the WHO than China. with a population of 1.2 billion. Isn't that amazing?
Absolutely. And this money is going to like neonatal and maternal and child health and so on.
Oh, of course. It's very healthy, all these things that they're producing for the children. The hockey mask for the cows. That's my favorite. That's my favorite. Definitely drop me the cow mask program. Ooh. And drop me on the our own chat that we've got here, Christian. You and I drop that food bank story as well. I think any information on that, I might take that and run with that on the broadcast tomorrow. So I appreciate your research on that. This is these are actually impactful stories, ladies and gentlemen, and we really appreciate Christian for bringing these to our attention. Thank you very much, Christian James.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Speak to you soon.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. That's Christian. And a big thank you as well to Basil Valentine in the first hour. And a bigger thank you to all of you, our listeners, our loyal listeners, for tuning in to the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT, today's news talk. We got another round for you tomorrow, same time, same place. And it's going to be hot and heavy. We've got a few interesting things that we're lining up, and we've got Matthew Lee at the courts in New York on the Trump trial. Wow. So expect some good information, some juicy stuff there tomorrow. So we'll see you then. Stay tuned here, top of our news headlines with TNT. More to come, more to come.